I'm curious about what you consider kind of standard of care for patients with BRCA germline mutations who present status post-debulking in terms of your approach to chemotherapy, bevacizumab, and PARP inhibitors, both in an optimally debulked patient and suboptimally debulked.
Well, that's a great question. So for a patient with a known BRCA-associated cancer, the chemotherapy really is paclitaxel and carboplatin. There have been some, and I think some people really believe this, that intraperitoneal chemotherapy for those patients with no evidence of disease may be superior. And that's based on some exploratory studies that were done retrospectively. But we've never really borne that out prospectively. I don't think it's wrong. I just think for me, they do very well with just every 21-day paclitaxel and carboplatin, and I have far less neutropenia than with dose dense, for example. So that tends to be my recommendation, across the board for folks from a BRCA or not, every 21-day paclitaxel carbo is what I use. Bevacizumab, I think, definitely has a role. There are patients who present with, terrible ascites, or those patients who you said are suboptimal. I think we see less of those nowadays because of the use of laparoscopic staging. I think we've gotten a lot smarter about not opening someone and having to just close them back up. So we see a much more kind of trend towards neoadjuvant. And I think those patients benefit tremendously from the addition of bevacizumab because you see a more rapid and more deep response because of the synergy between paclitaxel and bevacizumab. And so I consider that for those patients, again, with or without a BRCA mutation. Pre-Paula, the question was when you finished the six cycles and someone was in a great response, then what do you do? Well, certainly you go to a PARP inhibitor. And the nice thing about Paula is that it shows just definitively that the bevacizumab is nowhere near equivalent to a PARP inhibitor in a BRCA population in terms of its efficacy. It's a great drug, don't get me wrong, but PARP is the standard of care. But pre-Paula, you're like, well, okay, now I have to stop the Bev. And that just seems uncomfortable because in the studies of bevacizumab, that group where you stop the Bev, they acted just like you hadn't given them Bev. And so people were uncomfortable with that. That's what I would have said you had to do if you couldn't continue both. Paula is now NCCN listed. And so for me, if I had someone on with a BRCA-associated cancer who was on Bev and chemo and they had a great response, I would continue the Bev and add in olaparib. That's what I would do. Debulking, residual disease, all that equivalent. I would use the same thing.
Well, again, cost and reimbursement issues aside, you said olaparib, but why not niraparib?
Honestly, I think that the PARPs are very much equivalent in terms of efficacy. I truly do not believe there's a best PARP. They're all very effective, and the PARP you should use is the one you're most comfortable with. The NCCN goes by the data, and so the current data of maintenance bevacizumab and PARP in the front line is olaparib. But we have AVANOVA 2, which was, of course, a recurrent setting, platinum-sensitive recurrent setting, which was niraparib versus niraparib bevacizumab, and the combination looked better, and we have safety data. So reimbursement aside, do I think that's acceptable? Sure, absolutely.
What about the patient optimally debulked and, no evidence of disease after debulking, for example? Or basically, how do you approach the patients who BRCA germline, but, lower risk?
If I hadn't started bevacizumab, if I didn't think I needed it with the chemo and I was just using chemotherapy alone, then I would just go straight to a PARP as maintenance. That would be my preference.
Any preference in terms of which PARP?
No.
Niraparib or olaparib?
Niraparib or olaparib. Those are your two that are available right now in this setting.